Welcome to the Greg Bennett Show. I'm your host, Greg Bennett. And this, wow, it was an outstanding conversation with Olive Alexander Boo. Honestly, I came into this conversation after doing some homework and knowing the athletes that he coached with Christian Blumenfeld and Gustav Iden, knowing that he was an outstanding coach. What I didn't realize is just what a remarkable human being he is. And he's somebody that has such an extraordinary scientific engineering mind. But what makes him truly unique is that he has that and he combines it with this unbelievable people, person, communication skills, team building that you don't often get with the engineer type mindset. It was really incredible to just hear the way he shares stories, how they operate, how they work as a team and their relationships. Just a really fantastic conversation. And, you know, it's one of the longer episodes and I probably could have doubled this. I probably could have kept going and going. And in fact, when we ended the call, we basically said to each other, hey, we got to do another one of these, but let's do the next one in person. So we started figuring out how and where we could do that, but just an absolutely incredible conversation. He'll tell you about how he got into coaching in the world of triathlon. He shares some opinions about where the future of endurance sports are going and where we can actually make some gains, and it'll blow you away. I always thought we were near, you know, we were probably going to plateau soon enough at where we could go in human performance. But, you know, Olive said there's potential everywhere and it's extraordinary to listen to. Make sure you listen to the end on this one. Just so many great, insightful learnings that you can take away with you. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. It really was fantastic. A little bit of housekeeping. If you're loving the show, I'd love you to share it. This is one that you really want to share with family and friends, whether they're in the sport or not. There's just so many great takeaways in that. If you are enjoying it, I'd love a review. And if you're up for it, 5 stars on Apple. And please, if you want to get in touch with me, Fireside Friday Chats. I've done probably about 20 of them now. It's been really fun to get to know you, the listener. So don't be afraid. Reach out on Instagram, DM. We'll set up a time on a Friday to chat. And it's just been really good for me to get to know who I'm talking to. Just incredible journeys that you're all on. And it's been really great for me to listen to that. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. And remember, success comes to those who endure just one moment longer. All right, today's guest is arguably the greatest triathlon coach in the world. His results have made the entire endurance world stop and take notice. With a profound impact on the sport, he's guided his athletes to the pinnacle of triathlon success, including Olympic glory, world championships across the various distances, and record-shattering performances that have redefined what's possible in endurance sports. His analytical approach, combined with a relentless pursuit of knowledge, has not only elevated the careers of the world's top triathletes, but has also inspired a broader conversation about the science and art of high-performance coaching. Under his guidance, athletes have not just won, they have dominated, reshaping our understanding of preparation, strategy, and execution. From coaching the Olympic and multiple world champion, Christian Blumenfeld, to guiding Gustav Iden, also a multiple world champion and Ironman world champion in Kona in 2022. His influence spans the entire spectrum of triathlon. Today, we're diving deep into the mind of a coach who's reshaped the landscape of triathlon. His story is a testament to the power of relentless curiosity, strategic innovation, and the unyielding belief in the potential of his athletes. So welcome, and thanks for joining me on The Greg Bennett Show, Olive Alexander Boo. How are you, mate?
Well, what an intro.
One thing I'm known for on this show is I love my intros, mate.
That was humbling. Well, thank you
and,
very much.
And we can hit record. End record. I know. It's something that's funny. You know, I've been doing it for a while. I kind of enjoy it, though. It's a little bit of a, I don't know, a throwback at you just to say, hey, congrats, mate.
Well, I will remember that for some while.
I'll send it to you. I'll send it to you so you can put it. You can just put it on those bad days, on those sad days. You can be like, I am good. I am a good person, mate. Where are you calling from? Where in the world are you?
Actually, at the moment, I'm in Norway, west coast of Norway, and 3 hours drive north of Bergen, where Gustav and Christian lives. Yeah.
Yeah. It's got to be a bit cold there at the moment. We're recording early March. What's the weather like at the moment?
Actually, it's not too bad. This is typically the first spring month here, and temperatures are now creeping steadily above sub-zero. So we had actually cold some days ago, but now it's, let's say, around five degrees plus here, and actually quite nice weather outside these days. So okay. I can't complain.
Can't complain. And we were talking just before I hit record about, you know, family and travel. Have you done already some trips this year with your athletes?
Yeah. So many that I don't have a full track at the moment, but wow. It's been everything from Sierra Nevada to, some other locations. Travel have started. And of course this is going to get a busy year with Olympics coming up and also of course back to Kona.
Yes, it's a very big year for you, and you're joining your athletes Christian and Gustav. Are you joining them on? Do you do little stints on camp? So you kind of come in and come out, or are you there for weeks at a time?
No, normally I actually try to be with them as much as possible. We've had some years where I traveled more than 200 days. I don't know whether it was 200 or 220 or even more. Wow. But that was that is too heavy. That's not sustainable at all. Especially because I have a family, two kids and a wife, and I love to spend time with them. But half of that. That's something that is very sustainable. Normally, I try to be with them as much as possible at camps. If I'm not there, then I'm trying to arrange so that, for example, also my long-term mentor and friend, Oya Madsen, is there because he's also taking a little bit more of the, let's say, my shift as well, with especially when it comes to the swimming, but of course, in general, when we're sitting and planning and so on. Not very seldom short stints. I try to be with them as much as possible.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's not easy to be traveling, but you also need to be there and be intentional about the job that you're there to do. And I want to start by just reflecting on the last few years. I've been watching your athletes for a decade, but it was really this last, let's call it 3 to 5 years, that the impact, like I said in the introduction, it really just forced us all to go, whoa. And I'm going to just quickly glance over a few highlights, and I'm sure I'm going to miss some stuff, but I want to get your sort of thoughts on what were some of the really great highs in your mind and maybe some of the lows and what you learned from them. But quickly, I just want to sort of throw out here that, you know, Gustav Edom was the world number one ranked athlete in 21. Christian was world number one in 22 and 23. In 70.3 world champs, Gustav won in 19 and 21, and Christian won in 22. Ironman world champs, Christian won in St. George, Utah, which was the rollover from 21. And then later that year, Gustav Edom, in that record performance in Kona, won in 22. And then, of course, throw in that little thing called the Olympic gold medal, which Christian won in 21. That, for everybody listening, I've just quickly scanned over the greatest events that you can possibly win. And I even missed Christian's, ITU World Championship in there. It's unbelievable, the success and the way that you've executed as a team is quite extraordinary. What do you take away from the last few years that really stands out in something that you go, wow, we really performed well there?
I think for me, actually, the victories are more, call it, they say the championship wins are, those are the ones that, of course, you like to have in order to just be able to lower your shoulders a little bit and feel, okay, fine, we did good. Mm. But my, actually, it's more the, I really have become a big fan of the process leading into these races. And I would much rather have an athlete coming fourth place and where we both knew that we were best prepared in the world. We knew that basically that win was ours. But then, of course, in the end, it comes down to the day and things happens and you don't win. But we both know that what we put down have been, we couldn't have done it better. And we have done it better than everybody else. That is, I think, the most important part for me, rather than having an athlete that takes a podium and win. Mm-hmm. And I feel that I actually haven't contributed that much to the process. Yeah, maybe I get the glory and these kind of things, but it's not, that's not what I want. I want, or it is important for me to feel that I have performed equally well at those things that I am doing as they do. So I would say actually that Olympics, that of course it became a year longer than expected. That took a toll, I guess, on most teams simply because it is very demanding to be at your best. And then suddenly somebody gives you one more year that you have to keep going before you get maybe some rest. So when first Christian actually came over the finish line there with his performance, it wasn't, let's say, a shock because I didn't go there. I can't remember having any expectations like clear, oh, today we're going to win, today we're going to win, anything like that. It was just like tasks. And then we came there. He performed like exceptionally. Gustav had also, he didn't have his best day, but still we can't really complain over eighth place either. And Kasper came 11th. Mm-hmm. But I remember also like only 20 minutes after he passed over the finish line, I was already thinking on what do I have to improve here for my athletes for Paris. That was where my mind was already, like celebration. It. We hadn't planned any celebration actually. So it was actually the Japanese team that we worked together with that actually ended up taking the initiative on celebrating and getting some cookies into the camp and these kind of things. So big thank you to the Japanese team. For me, if I were to go to any races that have surprised me, it must maybe Christian's performance in actually in the world championship, ITU World Championship. Yeah, that was actually maybe my let's say the place where I would say I was a little bit more surprised, or because he came out of the water like he normally does, quite far behind, but he didn't get anybody to really work with to bridge up with the first group, and the first group had already been very clear on their tactics. For example, Vincent had said very clearly that he was more or less working as a domestic for his teammate in order to set him up for the championship win. Then on the same side, also there were other French athletes also in that mix there that normally is really great at like putting off like sprint finishes. Yeah. But then Christian just powers up the last round to that group there, and I think that was a little bit of shock for them. And then on the run there, he just throws down a performance that that was for me very for me personally very, very, very special. But other than that, I would say that the rest of the victories and championships, Gustav, of course, in Kona, he just pulls through like a machine. I think we had sat down and we had looked a little bit on some predictions and he was within minutes of what we expected. hindsight, we know that we could probably go in even faster. But this is more like when you order for the first time. It's also the you there's quite a lot of learning, as you know, better than most of when you've been first at a race that you've never been before at. The next time you come there, you have a different, you know the course even better. You know even more where you can extract a little bit extra and still survive it. And that is of course, what you take away afterwards. But for me, the World Championship, ITU World Championship with Christian, that was something extraordinary. Of course, Olympics is every 4 years. Of course, it's super special. But it's, I remember like race specific, it was the World Championship that surprised me a little bit more, simply because of the lead up to that race, because we had already determined that we had to go long course. And it was this mix between now long course, short course. And then, of course, Gustav's performance in Kona. Yeah,
I love everything you just said there. I love the focusing so much on the process and embracing the process. You know, I think we all get caught up so much on the outcome, and it's like, no. The process is where we all live. And then I also love that, you know, within 15, 20 minutes of him crossing the line, it's like, right, what's next? What can we improve on? You know, it's such a champion's mindset, right? It's like you're in this constant state of, okay, what can we do better? And again, it comes back to process oriented sort of mindset. I think that's really cool. And I remember watching that race in Edmonton, and I've raced in Edmonton, well, 20 years ago, but but that course, I actually remember thinking it's a strong man's course, and those, it's like, it's not hard hills. They're not punchy, but they're enough to take a bit of zing out of your legs, both on the bike and the run. And Christian really made the most of that one. I remember just going, wow, he backed it up. He did it. What a year. Huge congrats to you on all of those. But it hasn't all been smooth sailing. Have there been a few sort of tougher experiences that you've had to deal with and learn from?
I think that... Okay, so if we focus on, let's say, if we split it into now, because there is, of course, now Gustav as well with his Achilles. But if we take that second, before that, I would say that also that suddenly we of course, it was already decided before the Olympics that there would be a change to the structure. And of course we became in one way a smaller team, with only, Christian, Gustav and me. And of course, before there were more people to shift the load between, there were more athletes into the mix, more athletes also for me to focus on as well. That's, let's say you don't get as close. You get close, and that has always been important for me on the athletes. I truly believe in that, that the more emotionally engaged I am in an athlete, the more I'm willing also to stretch and invest also into that athlete when it really is needed. I would say that when you also suddenly get much more time together, you also get to know each other much better. You will typically get more into those, let's say, situations where you, where you maybe start arguing a little bit more and about a little bit things, because you don't, let's say there are things that you sometimes when you feel something or less something is not right, you can't necessarily put the finger exactly on it. It's just there's something in the background and you don't really know what it is. You don't, there's just something, let's say, annoying you a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then in discussions and other things, it comes forward maybe as a little bit like you are a little bit more tempered, or you have a little bit less, let's say, Yeah, you have a, let's say we call it the Norwegian shorter fuse.
Less of a filter, we would say here.
And that has actually also been, it has been first, it was a little bit like demanding, like, what is this? Like, because I think we all is like, okay, this is a new situation as well, because we have much more time. But one thing I've also had, like, very good people around me as well, so that when I felt that things where I it was difficult maybe to understand what is wrong here now, what am I doing something wrong, and so on, I had like really good people around me to sit down and talk with, and they were really good at guiding me back and saying, hey, you just sit down and have a normal conversation around this. And of course, I know the answer, but sometimes it's good to have that confirmation from people around you as well. And then me, Christian, Gustav have sat down as well. And we've had these discussions about things that has been a little bit difficult, like, why do you react like this way and so on. And for us, we have really grown. We have really grown to another level again. And that's not forgiven. I think that in many of these situations, it's easy to call it like you break up a little bit, or you drift a little bit more apart because things gets more difficult. But we have really grown as a team. Our communication have really grown. And that has been good. I would say that is maybe the biggest struggles we've had. But it's worth calling it a struggle. I would say it's probably more of, let's say, a normal part of life, but it's how you tackle it in the end that matters. And then, of course, I think initially there were some that thought, okay, fine, we would go back maybe to the national team and after the long course project was done. But the athletes decided that they, for different reasons, that they rather wanted to continue outside of the federation and continue with the setup that we had. And that was not an easy process because, of course, a lot of people get disappointed naturally. And it became, there are some conflicts that comes up from as a part of that, and that takes energy. But at some point we just decided, okay, fine, we can't let this take energy away from us. If we're going to win another Olympic, then we need to focus like every bit of energy we got on that Olympic. We can't waste a drop of energy on anything else. So we shifted our focus, decided rather look at the magnificent team that we've built around us now. And all the joy and all the energy that these people are bringing to us. And let's rather focus on that and just really enjoy the ride moving forward. Then, of course, it was already known that at the same time also that Gustav's mother was terminally ill from cancer. That came as a shock. But as soon as, let's say, the first bit of the shock had calmed down a little bit, he was determined that, like, we need to keep focus. His mother wanted him to just keep on going, obviously. And that was a family decision, of course that resulted eventually in the victory in Kona. But I think that after Kona, it came then, of course, a discussion with Federation. Of course, he got the time to absorb maybe parts that had already been suppressed for quite some while with this being a lot of away from home, and his mother, of course, being very sick, she came. Most people have seen, she came actually to races. She came to press to get both her and his father. Then that came, and then of course it was the story with Abu Dhabi, and then it was like there were so many things that starting just to build up that gave him one dagger after the other dagger, and eventually his mother passed away May last year, and I think then he just needed a little bit of downtime, and And when he, and then when he first started to ramp up the training again, and it was starting to get quite short time leading into the test event, I think that stress just became a little bit too much, that suddenly he ends up with an inflammation in his Achilles that shows up to be quite a tricky one. And that is, of course, a new challenge for us. But that's a little bit the thing that we like to say to ourselves, is that if it had been easy, then everybody else could have done it as well.
Exactly.
That is what has to motivate us, that this is something that is very tricky, but now we have the time to really show what we are made of.
And it's a part of that process. I mean, yeah, it's a part of your journey. I remember people say, well, I had a 27-year professional career. And I said, well, probably seven of them were really great. Ones that I could go, yeah, that were good years. 10 were average, they were okay. And 10 were really bad. And it's like nobody ever sees the bad, but that's where there's so much growth there that allowed me to have the seven fantastic ones. And, as elite athletes that are peering over the edge, looking to go beyond where no one's ever been before, little less themselves, there's going to always be something. But then you add in the tragedy of a family member and the impact that can have on the physical, mental, and emotional. Like, these things are all tied together, right? I mean, it's these stresses, however they end up showing, can really impact us. I also love that you talk about the relationship between all of you, and you just get the sense that it means something to you all. Like, you have heated debates with people that are close to you because you want it to work. Right. If you're not having heated debates, if you don't really care and you just let things just slide off, I feel like it means you almost don't care enough about it. I love the culture that you've created there and the openness that you all have with each other. I think that's outstanding. Just that communication.
Yeah. No, I really appreciate that. And I think, I'm not sure if this is the right term, English term, but I would say that something that already have for a long, long time, I don't know how long back, but I actually, this comes from my parents, and that is that what we call interhuman communication or interhuman values, that is something that has for a long time been very important, long before I started with sports. And I have parents that are very focused on this as well, and I guess that's maybe where I've gotten that from. But that's also one of the things that I think is maybe a little bit strength of it here, because also now for me, Christian, but also and especially also now me and Gustav and Christian as well, the process that Gustav goes through now, of course, at some point you are more you don't know where you are. It's like you're you don't know what you're fighting, you don't know. It's natural to doubt yourself also in this process. Will I ever be able to get back? But one of the things that I've seen now through this process and where Gustav is now, I don't say this to comfort him or to try to paint a different picture of what it is. But one thing I can say for sure, and this I've actually discussed also with Örjan, and that is that the path that he is on now, I know actually that Gustav will come back stronger than he has ever been before. It's not like something I just say that, okay, because this is what you hope, but it's sometimes when you go through the process and you start to see a little bit how he's starting to handle things, how he's starting to tackle things, how he tackles the downs and the ups you start to see whether an athlete is on what I would call a really healthy path. And now he is on a path where he will develop exactly like you say, those hard years, those are one that gives you the good years. And he is now on an extremely constructive path in, let's say, this hard year or hard years that will bring him even stronger back. And that is something that I really look forward to.
I believe it. I truly believe it. It's like having Lucy Charles Barclay and watching her keep coming back stronger after some of the obstacles she's dealt with. And it's like wow. And it's almost like you have this mindset when you've been pushed down, pushed down, pushed down, and you get the opportunity to do something great again. It's like, oh, it's even better. Like winning when you've had no obstacles is, yeah, it's nice. But when you've had to overcome, wow, it feels so fantastic, right? And it's like, it means more. I'm curious about, I want to rewind your clock a little bit. Rewind the clock and just give me a brief synopsis of sort of how did you find your passion for the world of triathlon? How did you even start your coaching journey?
I would say, let's start first with triathlon. That is, let's say, partially coincidence, because I have I've never actually been very interested in watching other people doing sports. So like I never spent really much time in front of the TV or looking even at the Olympics or world championships or these kind of things at all. I really much more preferred to be out doing my own stuff. So extreme sports was actually something that I actually found very early on passion for. So I've always been fascinated about things that are really extreme and abstract or these kind of things. So that's probably why extreme sports really appealed to me. But then in 2011, and as I've said a couple of times before, there was an accident in my family where I lost quite a lot of family members deep into the mountains. And I was really physically strong, but I had no endurance. And where the helicopter crashed, there were no mobile reception, and I had to run for, I think it was close to an hour, something I can say that Christian and Gustav would have done in 15, 20 minutes probably, to get up on a mountain peak to be able to call out to emergency and because the only way to access it there, that area is actually
did you, hang on, did you see the helicopter crash? Did you actually see it? I apologize if I'm making you have to revisit trauma, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, it was one helicopter that first flew myself, my mother and father, and some of my siblings up into the mountains where we were going to build a mountain chalet. And then the helicopter dropped us off there, and then the helicopter flew back, picked up the rest of the family, and then basically returned to the spot there. And it crashed 400 meters away from our chalet.
Oh, my goodness.
So... from there up to a mountain to the closest mountain peak, it is approximately, I would say a couple of kilometers of climbing, not steep climbing, but let's say uphill running to get up there. And this is there is no cellular reception in the area there, and it's approximately normal walking, 2 to 3 hours walk from the closest mountain road where you can stop and park your car. So anyway, not spending a lot of time on that, but for me, this ended up being a little bit of shift in my life where I decided to get more into endurance sports. And by chance, I grew up just outside of Eidfjord where Norseman is. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, okay, what kind of endurance sport should I get into? And then I thought, okay, Norseman, that sounds like pretty extreme. So if I'm going to do an endurance sport, why not do it extreme? So that was actually how I got into triathlon. And from there, what I normally, because I am, from my background, I'm actually an entrepreneur or engineer, but entrepreneur. I actually started building my first company quite early.
We could do a whole other show on that, by the way. I love having entrepreneurs on the show. This is my, actually, if you really want to know what I want to talk about, that's really the stuff I love. So anyway, go on.
What I think I've been good at is always building finding like really good people and building teams and finding mentors that could coach me on my ventures. And the same was actually here when I then planned to do Norseman. I actually met, it was a a common friend of me and Örjan, Dr. Örjan Madsen, that actually put or linked us. And he said, you should meet Örjan. He's also a really passionate kite surfer. And so I did. And he was one of the founders also of the Olympic Federation or mm-hmm. Sports Institute in Norway. And by chance, he was also involved with triathlon. And that was actually my start and how I got into that. My passion actually comes much more from just seeing how far things can be pushed. And what I really enjoy with sports is that it's so quantifiable. And because it is so quantifiable and we have agreed on this, let's say one single KPI almost, like that is the measure of performance, like your medals or let's say your performance, your records. It made it everything are so tangible, and if you have a good approach, it's easy to build system that allows you to measure the different progresses or different processes that you are involved in, and that is and then also working with humans. There is no more thing that I really enjoy more than just seeing people excel, like working together with people, whether that's for business or it is in sports, and where you're able to find these processes and KPIs and you see how people are growing in confidence and mastering more and more and reach their potential. I have to say that is my largest. The things that makes me cry and the things that makes me really enjoy what I do is to see Christian and Gustav being very happy. And it's also what makes me really sad when I see that there are struggles. But also knowing all those people that are part of, let's say, contributing to that we can do this, that makes us as good as we are. That is, I think that whole team thing, that whole culture thing around it I'm goosebumps all down my, all over my back just speaking about it.
Yeah, it is the relationships with the people that you make. it's fascinating to have that tragedy be such a catalyst in a direction for your life. And what I love is the tremendous ownership and the shift of your perspective that you took from that tragedy to motivate, it motivated you to live, you know, to live and live with intent. That's what I'm getting from what you're saying. I think there's probably a lot of people listening that are nodding their heads that have been through trauma and things like that. And you have a choice to be down and wallow, or you have a choice to say, right, I got to live and I got to live with intent. And for you, that was finding the world of triathlon. It was understanding, aligning your passion of breaking things down, deconstructing them, and then rebuilding, like as an engineering type mindset, right? It's like how can this be done better? And I love how you use KPIs. I love how that you're talking KPIs in coaching, because that's not a term that you're used to hearing from coaches, but it is that kind of entrepreneurial mindset. It's like, okay, we need these key performance indicators along the way to really see where we're at. And there's one bit I want to sort of talk about. I had a guy on the show by the name of Devin Klein, and Devin has started a boot camp business in the US that's taken off. He's 600 boot camps all around the US, and he's crushing it. And I asked him at the end, I said, mate, what's one bit of advice you'd give to a new startup entrepreneur right now? And he said, execute over epiphany. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, look, we all want to find the new thing that nobody's ever done. You know, the epiphany, the new, he said, leave that to the geniuses like Elon Musk or whoever else. He said, the rest of us just need to figure out ways to execute better. And he said, I wasn't the 10th boot camp. I wasn't in the top 1,000s, but we did decide we're going to execute better. And that's what I see with what you're doing. And maybe I'm wrong, but how are you doing what you're doing? I want to know, what is it about your execution that sets you apart from other coaches?
I I can't really speak for other coaches, but what I can say that I think is, or what I perceive as a strength is that I am, I'm very passionate about like those things that I get engaged in. I get really passionate about, and of course, there had been a lot of debate around Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hour rules and so on. But I actually think there is a lot to it. We learn about now large language models and AI and how extremely advanced they are getting by just brute force. Like you're putting in all this volume of work into something and how fast they really advance. And I think that's no different from humans. The difference is that the computer, you can just instruct it to do it and it does it. Mm-hmm. Humans, there has to be something that motivates you. I don't believe in some like forcing somebody to do it because yes, you can get them really good, but you will never be able to take them all the way unless you really find that intrinsic motivation. That there is some kind of determination there that is almost in undescribable. And this is, or indescribable. And for me, I would say that, when you spend a lot of time thinking, doing, it gives you, it's not only when I'm out in the field that I'm working with my athletes, I'm constantly thinking all the time, like, what can we do better here? Why is it like this? Because I also really like to have my own like meta discussions or with myself where I'm sitting and discussing with myself, why am I doing like this? Does this really make him better or them better? Mm. What are we really getting out from this? Even down to the technology and how we are quantifying things, can that be done better? Mm-hmm. So on the one side, you get like really deep into like these topics all the way down to, let's say, almost atomic level to understand like every bit and piece of how things are put together. But at the same time, I have this overview where I really like to have these philosophical discussions that ensures that I see the whole picture, and then somewhere in there, in between there, that's where the beauty become, or let's say is created, because when you have this both detail, very detailed, but also very overview, let's say enough details but a really good overview, I feel more that I am an engineer of what I'm doing rather than necessarily that I define myself as a coach that are very interested in physiology or this kind of thing. For me, it's more like everything in the universe is put together by atoms, and there is biochemical processes and so on, much in the same way that it is for a car where you put in fuel and there are biochemical processes as you're heating it up and you're adding oxygen and you're converting that into power. And ultimately, if you have an extremely streamlined car and drivetrain and these kind of things, you are able to get out a lot of speed, but then maybe you figure out that, well, it's not only about the speed, we actually have to be able to go really fast around the corners, so we have to trade off something here and add something here. But I'm very good at black boxing, let's say understanding the input and output and not obsessing over things that really doesn't matter to a process. I can easily just decide, okay, I'm just going to black box this for now because it won't necessarily make Christian or Gustav any bit faster, or if I necessarily spend more time now trying to figure out all the details that sits in here, as long as I can basically define our input and output. So I don't know, maybe it's the process, the process part of it, building the teams, but then also I'm also for me in the end, it's about the human. It's about the human. And for me, I have my passions. And of course, it's very helpful if my athletes shares the same passion as me, or understanding or passion as me. But if they didn't have that much interest, let's say, into the science or into this engineering approach to it, then of course, I would also have to shift my focus a little bit in my communication too, because in the end, it's about what motivates my athletes. It doesn't help if I'm super motivated about doing something specific if my athletes don't believe in it. Because if they don't believe in it, yeah, still they can do good, but they will... You need like this full buy-in from athletes and so on. So I think maybe having this overview and understanding, getting quickly an understanding, okay, what matters more, mediocre and less, let's say, in processes for a specific human, and then exactly starting to build something around I think it is maybe that, let's say, that overview. Hard to really set only day where I'm starting to get really concrete probably in describing exactly what differentiates me from others maybe is the day I sit down and write a book and I'm actually putting words to my own thoughts around.
I'll give you a little feedback right now.
Super.
If I was to say from the homework I did for this show, but also just talking to you, I would say you're very unique in the sense that you have this very engineering, scientific mind. And I know a bunch of computer engineers. I know loads of engineers. And one thing they're not great at is communicating. And it's not to say they're terrible, but you also have a unique gift in the way that you communicate and the way you understand and build teams. And so having this, I know we talk about art and science in coaches and things, but to actually have somebody that truly is deep in the science and the engineering and loves it, you know, not doing it going, oh, okay, they're wearing whatever wearable and now we've got to collect that data and figure it out. You actually are somebody that wants to create your own technology to get the information, but you also are very, you resonate with the athletes you're coaching in a way that your relationship with them is extraordinary. And so I think when you put all of that together, there really is those two things that, you know, you're doing incredibly well. And I'm blown away. I want to go rewind the clock and take myself back to when I'm 20 and have you as my coach because, you know, not that I love the science
I'm
though.
I'm very honored.
but listen, you know, we're talking a bit about the engineering and the science. I'd like to just lean in a little bit if we could on this. And, you know, when I've had Christian and Gustav both on the show and, you know, they're talking about doing their VO2 workouts every sort of 6 weeks. And they almost came across as that they're a bit like pin cushions, you know, with the lactate tests and everything else. And you guys are collecting a lot of data. I mean, and to be a great engineer, it's all about data collection and figuring it out. Are there certain areas that you are finding more impactful for your athlete, whether that be, okay, we need to be doing more lactate testing or VO2 testing, or is it more about looking at heat management and how we're using calories and how they're being burned and offset in the body, or aerodynamics? Or are you kind of, because a lot of these things are, some things are going to save you minutes and some things are going to save you seconds and others are going to be minuscule savings. Do you kind of approach it by going, we've got to make sure we maximize in these certain areas, or how are you approaching each of the athletes each year?
Yeah,
so, question.
Yeah, no, but that's that is spot on. I think you like for me, it's been like almost identically those words that you used, and that is for me. It is about the minutes, the seconds, and the tenths of seconds. Right. And then basically when you're looking at, okay, now we have this race coming up or Paris coming up, where do we think we are able to gain the minutes? Where do we gain the seconds? And where do we gain the tenths of a second? Because that will immediately identify, or let's say that, or make sure that we spend our time where we will get the most out of it. And that means also that for me, and this is something I also really enjoy, and that when you have an open communication too, it's not dangerous to be open about that. Okay, this is something we don't know yet. This is actually learning, and that's going to fall mostly on me, because my task is exactly to prepare them. But to be able to prepare them, I also have to prepare myself. And they have full, like this is a process that we all have come to love quite a bit, that it's learning. It allows me to be curious, to dive into new things and approach it like completely, maybe even differently than what have been done before, to see if we can do something smarter or better. And of course, one thing that of course now is also we are using more and more. So it has been known for a couple of years that we have been making AI systems what we call foundational models or biophysics models. But that is also... So the whole point for me with AI and so on is the ability to supercharge processes, because it's not that we are not able to do it ourselves, but it's just the sheer amount of work that sometimes is needed in order to structure things up, find details, or find those competitive advantages. Because the closer you get to peak human performance, the more it will be about diminishing return of investments as well, or where you invest your time. And the smarter and the better systems you also have to build around you as well, that allows you to do this even more efficiently. So we are now a couple of years into... not only a couple of years, we have, of course, more than collected like substantial amount of data over more than a decade on pretty extreme levels. But at the same time now, AI is supporting that processes. But I would say that it is super important to it's easy to obsess over details, but that's where it is important exactly to have a system that ensures that you spend your time where you and your athletes agrees that this is the place we should spend our time now, in order to make sure that we first solve those minutes. And then we solve, let's say, when that is fixed and we are really able to get that advantage, that's the time when you shift your focus to the seconds, if you get there, and then eventually to the tenths of a second.
I love how I've been watching you guys for years, pushing the boundaries of, you know, what's allowed. That was me. I feel like there's so many ITU rules in the World Triathlon Series, which are because of Greg Bennett, right? Because it wasn't a rule, and now there is a rule. And I'll always play by the rules, always. But if there's no rule, I'm going to be the guy that, you know, will run along the back of the pontoon after the gun's gone to run to get to somebody's feet. Or I'm going to be the one that, whatever it was, I was always trying to come up with ways to do things that'll buy me time, you know. And I know the famous... race suit that Christian Blumenfeld and Gustav wore at the Olympics, you know, the see-through suit, you know, and that's all for heat management and everything else. And maybe there's more to it, but...
The tri-bar.
What was that?
And the TT bar, tri-bar.
And the TT bars, exactly. And I think Gustav's running shoes he had in Kona, exactly, which were super far. I mean, I'm all for that. Like, if people can be making rules because of something we did, it's fine. I mean, I have no problem with that. And I also, you've got me excited talking about AI. Have you got a platform already built that people can have access to? I think you do, don't you?
So the way we do have a beta group now, but scientists and other, let's say, some very select coaches and scientists that are on board using the system. But we are not actually really developing, a front-facing... it will be, I'll call it a sandbox application that everybody can go in and play around and do whatever they want in. But we are more building, the foundational AI model that sits, on a low level and are capable of taking all the data and understanding how to filter and process all these kind of things and put it into a greater context. Yes. And then we will rather open up for people to build their own applications, APIs or whatever on top of that to leverage that, because there are so many other businesses around in the world, like Training Peaks, Strava, Swift, Peloton, Technogym. There are so many companies around in the world that have like large communities that are really good at understanding what matters to the community. And then we rather solve, let's say the call it the new world of data behind there, and then they can decide on what is important rather to their community and leverage that for them. Mm. So
it's an exciting time, yeah. Mate. It's an exciting, yeah. Look, I've spent the last couple of years myself building AI products, and I'm leaning in building what I'm calling AI 2.0 with much smarter people than me. I'm the jazz hands. I like to, like you said, I'm not bad at creating teams. I get the right people in the room and I sit back and watch magic happen. But it's an exciting time. I think that we're very much in AI 1.0 right now, where individual companies are implementing their own AI. And we call it AI, but basically it is just collecting a whole heap of data and learning from it and putting something out to the world that we can use. And I love that you're using it to enhance productivity, because I think coaches need to look at things that will make them better, make them more productive. Mm. And from all the data that you're collecting from your athletes, you want to be able to
exactly
put it in and use it. On that, talking about other coaches, you are coming from a place now, which whether you like it or not, you are arguably, like I said at the top of the show, one of the greatest triathlon coaches in the world. And I'd love to see if you have any advice that you could potentially share to other coaches to perhaps elevate them and their athletes. Is there any kind of advice that you could pass on?
Yeah, it is simple. I would never have been where I am if it hadn't been for that. Okay, there are some things that we can't control, and that is access to other brilliant people around us. Some are just born a place where that coincidence is there, and there are other brilliant coaches around it that we can let's say sit on the shoulders of, or we are allowed to climb up on the shoulders of. But I think that even those coaches will never allow you to climb on top of their back unless you are bringing something to the table. And in the beginning, I think this is passion. When you bring passion and energy to the table, I think this is something that most people gets. And of course, chemistry is there. Then I think this is something that we all like to be a part of, very energizing and nice, or just a cool environments. People that are passionate and mm-hmm. yeah, contributes. So I would say that I would never have been where I am if it hadn't been for passion and being able to play. And I think that, of course, we've come, one of the, let's say, the diseases that we see in the world today is that more and more people are looking for these quick fixes, like almost like exercise in a pill, health in a pill, solutions in a pill in generally, like these easy ways to the top. But this is one of the things is that I think people will realize sooner or later, yes, there are maybe this one, let's say, call it outliers, where suddenly like all coincidences just meet at the same time and people can take the highway all the way to the top. But like that, to hope for that happening is almost like hoping to win in a lottery. Mm-hmm. I believe much more in hard work dedication, or let's say determination over time, is going to bring you all the way to the best of yourself. But in order to bring out the best in yourself, you have to pick those areas where you really are passionate about, mm-hmm. and see what you can bring. And there are many times I've been thinking that this technology now, I've completely exhausted it. There's nothing more to learn here. And then I go on to some other things, and suddenly I start to see some new connections and understandings. And I learned something new again about that technology that I basically was working on before, or that process that I was working on before, because my understanding gets larger and larger. And this is where I would say that the only true advice that really is there is that, we can, like people sometimes say that it's first people work hard, but then it's more about working smart. No, it's working hard and smart. That's what really will bring you all the way. But in order to be able to do that, I think that it doesn't help to try to copy other people. I didn't try to copy anyone. I just had some crazy ideas and I was very passionate about what I did. And that allowed me to have the stamina to stay long enough that at some point people say, hey, this guy have something interesting to bring to the table. And they allowed me to sit at the table. And of course, I was also lucky with the people that I had around me, because I know that I also had a lot of crazy ideas as well that you could easily have dismissed and just say, okay, get this guy out of the room. He's just completely mad in his head. But they had the maturity and we're able to see past it and see, okay, maybe if we just coach this guy the right way, maybe there will be something good coming out there in the other end. And I think that is maybe my advice to coaches and athletes that want to improve, and that is to you have to find your thing that makes you really passionate. Because if you just use yourself, if you don't compare yourself with others, but if you just reflect over yourself, and then you think, okay, if I am myself now, this is where I am today, and this is where I'm likely going to be in 1 year, for example. Will I be able to get be even better? Like, say, if I'm going to compete with myself now, improve myself, but I'm going to make a version 2 of myself, an even better version of myself, what is that person going to have to do? Would that person be better off, if I had pursued a little bit more like that, if I basically ditched that, for example? Like, you have to, again, I would, yeah, ultimately, it's a race and it's competition against others. But as long as you look at how you can improve yourself along the road there, you can imagine that every time you improve, you're one step closer to the top. And eventually, if you just continue to improve, you will be at the top. But that process, it starts within, it starts with yourself, and it starts with finding those things that doesn't feel like it takes more energy of you, because it requires you to do stuff that you don't want to do. You have to find those things that motivates you and keeps you going. And that's, unfortunately, I can't give you the answer for what that's going to be. That's going to be something that you maybe will take you months, maybe it will take you years sometimes to just find that thing that really suddenly just supercharges you.
Mate, that's not just a message for coaches and athletes. That's a message for life. I think, finding something where you can find purpose and you can unleash your potential and understand who you are and what you want, and then fully take control of your life, right? It's like that. Once you can do that, and that passion then can fuel you through the hard times, because passion's easy when things are all going well. But the reason we got to be passionate is because there's going to be a lot of shitty times and we all have to keep going. And that's when you really need passion. So, mate, I love that. Well said.
Thanks.
I want to finish with a couple more things. Let me know if you have to run, start winding up, but I'm loving this chat. So, I want to just talk about some of the logistics. With now with the season, with the PTO 100, the Olympics, and then obviously you got Ironman Kona or Nice, depending on the year. How are you guys making decisions on where you want to race? Is it, I'll just let you answer it because I'm interested.
For me, it's very, I would never say to Christian and Gustav what races to pick, but I would, if I see something would like could potentially conflict with something that we have defined as a very important race, I would sit down and discuss a little bit with them whether this is a smart choice or not. But ultimately, it's their decision what race they want to race, and my task is to make sure that they are as prepared as possible for those races. So what races? Of course, on a high level, we could say, okay, this year it's the Olympics that really matters, and we agree that okay, then that let's not jeopardize that by doing Ironmans or other things before the Olympics, simply because the Ironmans are so demanding races. That means that now, okay, we all agree, fully focus on that. But what races to do? Of course, for Christian, he is already qualified for the Olympics. So for him, it's more about getting the race. Like now, you can imagine we are 1.5 years behind our competitors in terms of time that we have had available to do Olympic racing. So we have to pick up faster again, let's say that pace again. And that means, of course, that there are, of course, a lot of things that we can measure in the lab, in the field. But in the end, you also have to go into the races because Olympic racing is extremely dynamic, that you know better than most people. And that means also we have to do some racing. The difficulty with this year is, of course, that the amount of races are simply less because of the Olympics. Mm. So we have to take as much learning as possible from those races that we can do. But I would say that Christian is on a really good trajectory. We wouldn't have done this if we weren't if we didn't really believe that we could make a dent on the podium again. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah, races. It comes like ultimately it comes down to what they want to do, and then we have more like high level discussions on what is smart and not, yes. And so on. Yeah.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense. Next question for you. I've talked a bit on this show about some of the massive advancements we've seen in performances due to either different types of training, like what you guys are doing and the way you're operating, or even equipment, you know, definitely the super shoes, and there's been some advancements in aerodynamics and all sorts of things. But curious to see where you might see the most significant opportunities for gains in the future. Is there anything that's sort of glaring where you think, you know, because we often sit back and go, oh, this must be the pinnacle of physical fitness. This must be it. You know, we keep going faster and better. But is there something that you're going, no, this is, we got more opportunity here, or here?
I think that in racing, because here we have to differentiate between racing and training. In training, I think there's going to be still quite big advancements. And that is what ultimately also you bring out on race day too. So the biggest gains, or let's say the biggest influencer on the results in a race will be what you do consistently in your training. So there exactly how we integrate sensor technology and other things that allows us to train consistently smarter, better. That's going to be the biggest. That's going to have the biggest impact on race times still moving forward for the next half decade at least. Mm. In terms of racing itself, I think that shoes. Yeah, there we will still see in triathlon, Olympic triathlon. We will still see that will continue to have an impact on racing. The main reason for why we were actually in a position where we just decided, okay, a shoe doesn't cost very much money, so it doesn't make sense to really enter into a contract with any company, because it's just like, just pick the fastest shoe, mm-hmm. whatever is mm-hmm. available. And then we have of course really good equipment and methods in order to quantify the performance of shoes and so on in specific settings. But then we sat down and said, of course, there, it would be really cool to sit down with a team and see whether we would be able to influence what also comes, so that we had a bigger impact on what we could use on race day too. Mm-hmm. And this is actually why we enter into the cooperation with On Running, where they took home research and development to Switzerland, built their own laboratories there. And I think, I'm to put it this way, when you on the start line this year, it won't be you won't mistake the shoes, to put it that way, when you see them.
Yeah.
But it's exactly like you say, you are always within the rules, but it's about, okay, how can we utilize these rules to our advantage, the best possibly to our advantage. So shoes, simply because triathlon racing is not straightforward. It's not marathon running. It is a sport where you have a lot of cornering, 90 degree cornering, 180 degree cornering. This year is also going to be cobblestones as well. That's going to have an impact. If it's wet, that's going to be a completely different race than if it's dry in Paris. So shoes, yes, that's a place where there are still going to be advancements, and it will make people be able to run faster in triathlons still. Bikes, this is heavily governed. Of course, what we developed our tri-bar for Tokyo Olympics that ultimately led to complete ban.
I know, I can't believe they got rid of them. You know, I used to, this is going to get me in trouble now. I used to, see, I was in the generation where we first had the full extensions were allowed, right?
Yeah.
Like I was the first year of draft legal racing in 96, and we all hated it. Anyway, draft legal came about. We had to use road bikes, but we were allowed to have aero bars on. And they were fully out. And then they said, no, they got to be behind the brake hoods. And so I had this little, mine were just loosely on. So I could extend them out, extend them back in. And then they started locking them down. So yes, I know. And now they're gone for good. I'm like, oh, it was kind of part of our sport. I kind of miss them. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit old school. I kind of go, oh, I don't want to see a bunch of triathletes riding road bikes.
Yeah, because what we did there is exactly we circumvented those rules by that we made a computer mount that works as a bridge up. So basically, you could sit in not even in a the UCI time trial position. You could sit in a full Ironman position.
Yeah.
But because we built that let's say that bridge, or that if you look at some of the photos there, you see this half, let's say double half moon that you can lock your arm inside. You actually not only did it actually make the position much faster much faster and comfortable, but it actually also made the position far more safe than actually sitting and being completely crunched in there.
Of course.
It made the position faster but also safer. And for us, of course, when people saw this, they went nuts. They tried to get that ban on the starting line in the Olympics. But of course, we knew we had read the rules from here to the moon, and we knew exactly what was allowed.
Now it's a psychological game, mate. The goal is to always get people thinking. I remember I used to bring my team with me to a race like Hy-Vee, big money race, and I'd be like, look, I'd have my bike mechanic, chiropractor, everybody, and I'd say, look, I just need you to walk with me to transition. Don't have to do anything, but I need people to be going, oh, Greg's come prepared. He's got his whole team with him. Like, I'm winning points. The race starts before the gun goes, people.
Exactly.
I love that.
Yeah. The funny thing is that we actually didn't pay very much, or let's say very much attention to the psychological aspect of it. Because I think that at the moment, you start to think a little bit more about, or let's say if we have been thinking more, how can we make this in a way that it will be let's say intimidating to others? I think that you're already derailing a little bit from, let's say, true performance. So, rather by focusing a little bit on the psychological aspect of it, we have been much more about, okay, how can we make something here that is really, really fast? And then it just becomes a psychological weapon.
Of course,
when it comes to the starting line.
Yeah.
So, but on the bikes, of course, it's very locked at the moment. I would say it's a little bit sad for the sport, because triathlon is a little bit more this, call it, sport where you
innovation, mate.
Yeah,
innovation,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you want to keep it more open, more fun, and these kind of things. So I can maybe understand it a little bit for the Olympics itself, but for the other, for the World Championship Series, and especially Ironman. Ironman is a place for me where you people should be allowed to go bananas within reason.
No, but, I know what you mean. Yeah.
So, but then fueling, sure. There is, I think this is unfortunately one place where people, they spend too much energy on this before it really is needed on or what when they really should do it too. But of course, the advancements now in bicarb, in basically carbohydrates, of course, we have now also ketone monoesters. Yes. And you have, of course, products like we are working also with a company that are making an call it an you have most people have heard about antioxidants, but you also have something called an adaptogen, and this is derived basically from pine bark extracts. And people know about, most people have heard about beetroot. It increases, or let's say you basically provide the body with more nitrate so that you are able to hopefully produce more nitrate oxide. But this but plasmide actually helps increase the production of it. So of course there is with Morten and the reason why we worked with them, we were actually sitting down doing an evaluation many years back now of different companies that were around, and then looking at, okay, what do we really think from a science or engineering standpoint here is valid? What do we think that is actually possible? And of course we know that, okay, why, let's say if you take carbs as an example. Just to simplify this, if you say that there is, let's say, a little bit more than four calories in a gram of carbohydrate, in the past, we normally say that, okay, 60 to 90 grams, that's what research basically said that was possible to take up during activity or strenuous activity. But then one of the things that some smart people in Sweden found out that actually came from the medical industry is like, why don't we try to deliver carbohydrates to the body much the same way that you actually deliver medication to the body? So you encapsulate it, and in this case it's by a hydrogel that basically take away the gastrointestinal stress, because that is actually the problem. It's not like there are other limitations like 60 to 90 grams. It is basically that we typically see that people get normally, they get gastrointestinal stress there and diarrhea or things that are even worse when they go there. But what they did is say, okay, fine, can we bypass that? Yes, they formed that, they packed the carbohydrate. There's no invention. Like the carbohydrates they're using is exactly the same like everybody else. It's just that they packed it into a, call it a vehicle.
To deliver
the carbohydrates smarter. Yeah. And now you can imagine that, okay, if you, again, simplified, if you basically said, okay, just for sake of simplicity, we say that you are able to take up safely, let's say 75 grams, middle way, 75 grams of carbs per hour. We know also that the biochemical efficiency of humans sits around 20%. So what does this mean? Yeah. It means basically that for every, let's say for every gram that you put into, or that you're using of carbs, 20% of this approximately are going into forward propulsion. That's what you're able to utilize to propel yourself forward. The last 80% of it is pure heat. That's heat amazing. Production for me. But yeah. So that means that from those 4 calories, we know that 4 calories, that's the equivalent of less than 4 joules or 4 joules. So that means that if you are able now to double that, so let's say you are able to go now to, so 4 joules. But then since you're only able to use 20% of that, then you are, let's say, at 0.8 joules is what you're able to get from that gram. But if you now can basically increase this to 150 grams, like Christian and Gustav are even higher, but let's say you go to 150 grams of carbs per hour, that means suddenly now that you get double the amount of basically joules out. And we know also that 1 joule per second is the equivalent of 1 watt.
Wow.
The equation is actually very, very simple. Again, this is a little bit oversimplified, but it's basically to show how important how important like fueling is in order to perform. Because simply, if you run out of fuel, like most triathletes have experienced, it's a horrible feeling when you're bonking. And the one like one of the let's say best ways to prevent bonking is that you need to pace yourself according to your fueling. But it means also if you can fuel more, you can also start now to pace yourself a little bit faster as well, simply because the turnover, or let's say the input is higher, so the turnover can also be higher. Wow. So fueling is super important. And if you now also can use now, for example, products like for example, Plasmaid, that is increasing also the oxygen utilization, it means also that, let's say, when we go into a lab and we measure the gas exchange ratio, so oxygen versus CO2, then we know that when you the closer you get to a ratio where you produce equally much carbon dioxide as you consume oxygen. So say that if it's equivalent, so if you basically consume, let's say, 4 liters of oxygen, but you're at the same time also producing 4 liters of CO2, that means basically that now you are around what we call an RER value of one. An RER value of one means basically, and this comes from biochemistry and stoichiometry, but then we also know that if you take fats and carbohydrates and you basically combust them, so basically you combust them, that's going to have a certain amount of oxygen demand, because as most people learned at school, if you take away oxygen, anything will stop burn, or most things in the world will stop burn at least. But that means also when something is burning, it also produces CO2. And we know that when the ratio of basically O2 and CO2 is the same, then we know that you are exclusively burning carbohydrates. So basically what we want to, of course, for an endurance athlete to do is to make sure that you can go with as high power as possible but with the lowest possible RER value, or let's say with low RER values, because it basically means that you are able to combust your fuels more sustainably, or let's say aerobically speaking. And what products like Plasmaid does, for example, is exactly to increase this. It allows you basically to increase your utilization. So you'll see that basically your RER value will eventually shifts to more fats than carbohydrate. Meaning again, if you're fueling 150 grams now, you will be able to go even faster again, because not only are you fueling more, but you're also using those carbs more sustainably as well. Yeah. So there are so many things that we learn along the road that.
That's massive, mate. Yeah, that's massive.
Yeah.
Is there a way my brain is digesting all of that, but you talk about only 20% of that fueling being allowed to, let's call it, used for velocity. Is there a way to change that equation and increase that to say 25% to say, you know, or like to be more efficient in terms of creating the heat in the body and using more of it towards propulsion? Yeah.
Yes. So we are also doing a special project together with a company in Switzerland called GreenTech. They have this product called Core. And as you have seen, most people or athletes now in the World Tour circuit, and also in triathlon and many other sports as well, they have this white sensor hanging off their heart rate monitors. And that one, what most people associate that with is that it measures your core temperature. But the way that it does it, and it was actually what really caught my attention. I was introduced to GreenTech actually by a good friend of mine, Dan Lorang, which you also have been on your show.
Love Dan. Great man. Yes.
Brilliant guy. He told me, Olav, you should meet the CEO of the company. His name is Wolf Glatz. They are really brilliant people. And then I remember when I went into the meeting, very skeptical, thinking, okay, why would I, like, okay, fine, it's sustainable to have a sensor sitting on the outside. You don't have to take and throw this expensive pills every time after you've done a session. So surely that is. But then again, I also want to make sure that when I first do this, I want to know that I can trust the data. But then when they told me how they were doing the core measurement, this was like, I was thinking, okay, they actually measured the heat flux. So that means actually, if you to give an analogy, the power meter on your bike, that measures the mechanical power. So for every calorie that you are consuming, it measures the mechanical part of, mm-hmm. That you are turning that gram of carbs or fat into the mechanical power that propels you forward, but only to 20% of it. Mm-hmm. Then, you don't know. For people that are more sedentary, it will be lower, and we know that the lead sits around 20%, maybe a little bit slightly higher for some. Yep. And it also depends on modality, what kind of sport you're doing.
Yep.
But what this technology is actually a thermal power meter. So this one, actually, the way that they are actually calculating your core body temperature is that it actually measures the thermal or the heat flux, but now we are doing a project on thermal power. So you now suddenly have a thermal power meter on your body, so you can actually measure how much heat you're producing. And the reason for why this became so important for me, or why I really wanted to do this project with them, was exactly because not only are we then able to measure your calories, or let's say approximately how many calories you are expending over a day when you're not sitting, or not, when you don't sit on your bike and you are pedaling, but you're just living and moving, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. that you're still producing a lot of heat, and that heat is a result of basically combusting calories in your body. Mm-hmm. So now with this one, because I knew with Christian Gusta, because we have these portable metabolic analyzers, you probably heard about them, VO2 Master. But the good thing with them is that you can put it on very easy out in the field, and you measure the oxygen consumption now. Of course, the problem with this is that you won't get athletes, even though that's a super portable device, you're still not going to get an athlete wearing these devices all the time anyway. That's not going to happen. But when we started using this technology quite a lot, I was interested in exactly engineering approach. How can, in the same way you take a Formula One car and you increase the efficiency of the combustion, so you lower mm-hmm. the heat, mm-hmm. or you are able to recycle the heat in those cars. They are more like recycling the heat into power again. For humans, how can we make this even better? Like, are there ways to put together the training, the way we do interventions that can allow us to increase the efficiency of the body by putting things together? And one thing we discovered now soon, half a decade ago, was that we started to see a pattern. But in order to get better control of this pattern, we need a technology that monitor this in real time, like on every session, without the athletes feeling that it was a struggle to put it on. It was more like you just put on your heart rate monitor and then it's on. And then it connects to your watch and you get the data straight in your watch. And I can sit afterwards and analyze this, not only that single session, but suddenly over time to start to look for patterns and other things. And this is exactly comes down to the question that you're asking. What can we increase the efficiency of the body? And the answer is, it seems like it, yes. And we are able even to reproduce it. And we are now experimenting about also starting to try to do more of this leading into races as well. And mm-hmm. that means suddenly that for every calorie that you are burning now, you are able to produce less heat. So that means that you will take longer time for you to reach critical temperature, or meaning you can go with a higher power or higher pace or velocity without that actually you're approaching critical temperature, because simply you have improved efficiency. So there's less thermal power, higher mechanical power for the same calories turned around.
Man, yes. Just talking to you, I feel like, I came into this going, okay, we're kind of hitting the plateau of where we can actually go in physical performance. And just this last 20 minutes and when we were talking about whether it be tech integration, shoes, bikes, or this nutritional space, or just monitoring the body and the heat. We talk about athlete wellness, and we can talk about, I don't know, mental performance, but excuse me, it's absolutely outstanding. It's got me thinking, wow, we have plenty more room to grow here. It's exciting, mate. It truly is. I hear your passion. It's got me all going now. I'm like, oh yeah, here we go. We're going to talk a lot off air here. I got a lot of ideas. Anyway,
I look forward to that.
I want to finish up with what I do with every guest, and that's we do a final four, and it's a little bit just more getting to know you a little bit more. And so first one is, if you could talk to your 18-year-old self, what would you tell them?
Okay, first disclaimer, having respect for other people independently of opinion and other things are super important. But that is something that I already had. I think my parents had been very good at ingraining me from
my Yeah.
But that means also that like everybody's opinion, like I think one thing that have changed significantly in me over the years is one, is the importance of relationships. And I feel like that have made like big jumps just the last half decade, where like relationship just becomes more and more important to me. Mm-hmm. And the other part of it is that we are all humans independently of our choices. Like I saw this, I don't watch very much television or anything at all, but I just watched this one series together with my wife called The Crown. And one of the most powerful, I think, scenes there was basically when Prince Charles, no, Philip, sorry, Prince Philip, he basically... meets the four astronauts, or the three astronauts.
Astronauts. Yes.
And he is looking for purpose in life. And his takeaway from that, like he was completely shocked after that when he came.
He was let down, wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say, but more like completely surprised, because he comes out and he sits, the queen was looking at him and just saying, "So, how was the meeting?" And just like he is like almost like somebody took away something from him, and just says that those guys are just like normal people, like. Normal mechanical people, like, and he was looking for purpose of life. And here there are some people that have been stepping on the moon and thinking, like, these guys, they've seen meaning to life, and he's looking for meaning in life. And what that just tells me, and it reconfirms, whether you are the king of the most powerful kingdom in the world, or whether you are basically working as a cashier or someplace. We are still the same people with the same struggle, with our different opinions. We are equally crazy. There are like for me, there are really not any true geniuses. There are some people we like to call geniuses, but I would say that it's not that person that is a genius. It is who we make a genius, simply because the timing, the people, everything that was around there made that people. Very much like me as well. If I had been a different place, I could have been like just like the normal people, the normal guy working or walking around the street, but I would still have my same thoughts. I would still have my same ideas and all these kind of things. And that is maybe something that I would maybe say to my 18-year-old. And that is that, people are all the same.
No, it's well said, mate. I think that's great. I'm wondering if your 18-year-old self would have listened to you, but I
that's I'm another just kidding. Thing.
All right, next one. If you have a dinner party and you're allowed to invite any three people, they can be living or dead, ideally not family, who would it be?
This is the thing that I would.
It changes say. Every day, by the way. You're gonna hang up here and go, I should have said.
Yeah. No. I would rather say that this is like relationships have become more and more important to me over, and actually ties into both those things, like one, the relationship, and but also the that there are no true. Like those people we call geniuses is because we make them geniuses, not because themselves are geniuses. We are all equal. And I would say that, those people I would like to have dinner with is actually those people that matters to me and I would like to spend even more time with. So that is, I'm going to be so boring to say, even though I know that ideally it shouldn't be family, like more time with family.
It's okay. That's something.
And then of course, Christian and Gustav having more dinners with them simply because they are two people, and Örjan because there are people, Morten, I shouldn't mention names actually, because there are too many people around me that I should sit down and have dinner with. And it would mean much more to me than sitting down and having a dinner with, for example, surely sitting and having having a conversation with, for example, Elon Musk or our own prime minister, Jonas Gahr Støre, for example, or people that, of course, we have put them in a position there to have a big influence on humanity. But I think it wouldn't be to learn from how they were able to create things. It's more like to understand more the sustainability of the decisions they are making.
I love what you're saying, though. There's a funny thing I saw on Instagram or somewhere, and it's got, they interview all these parents and the parents, and the same kind of question, you know, who would you want to have dinner with? And they're all going, oh, you know, whatever, you know, the Queen, the King, or, you know, Ronaldo or Elon Musk. And they come up with all these amazing names, and then they interview their kids. And every one of the kids are like, I'd love to have dinner just with mom and dad. And then they made the parents watch all these kids going, I just want to have dinner with mom and dad. And they're like, oh, we didn't put family first. Oops. you can have dinner with anybody. Not my kid. No.
Exactly. Yeah, but actually thinking of it as you're mentioning it as well, maybe more is where would I have a dinner with my family? Having that dinner in an extremely special place that leaves a lasting memory together with my kids and my wife. That's maybe...
Well, come to South Florida, mate. There we go. I'll show you.
We'll have dinner.
We'll have lunch on the beach. Dinner on the beach.
And we have kids more or less the same age as well.
Kids can go play. Our kids can go play.
Yeah.
All right. Just a couple more, and then I know we're using a bit of your time here, but where do you see yourself in the next 5 years? You know, coaching still? Have you got other things in your mind? What are you thinking?
No, I have to say that what actually triggered me to go into making AI for biophysics actually comes from a request from the health sector. Mm. So we created this company called Enthalpy, and I have to say that if I can take the learnings and all the, let's say, the crazy research we have done over the last 10 years, God knows what research we didn't do. if that can contribute to make life better eventually for people that are trying to live ordinary lives, or to prevent people, getting diseases or sicknesses, that is something that will like matter more to me than anything else. So I would say AI, not for the sake of AI, but to build actually systems today that allows us to help people live better lives. That's going to take more of my time. Coaching, yes, still. With Christian, there's going to be maybe a shift of sports, not completely unannounced after Kona, not necessarily like an abrupt transition, but there will be probably a transition. Gustav still, that's going to still be triathlon. So I should never say never, but I would probably not take on more athletes. I normally work more with coaches, so coaching coaches and helping them. Others. So, next 5 years, I really hope we are able to do something great within health and performance.
For
people using AI.
You're a good man. You're taking your knowledge and learnings and you're building upon it. So, you know, not just the elite athletes and others can benefit from your learnings. And having a tremendous why, you know, why you're doing something is often, you know, it fuels that passion. It's really cool, mate.
Thanks.
Let's finish up real quick. I want to see how fast your rapid fire questions you can do. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. Mountains or ocean?
A bit of both.
Okay. Early bird or night owl?
Both.
Okay. The one piece of tech you can't go without?
None.
You can go without all of them?
Yeah.
I love it. Two most used apps on your phone?
That depends. My phone.
What one word to describe your coaching style? One word. Can you do it in one word? I don't know.
Experimental.
Yes, I was going to say curious or experimental. I love that. Okay, one book you would gift to a friend. It depends on the friend, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, one book you would gift to me. Let's get specific. one book you think Greg should go read. It can be fiction, non-fiction, I don't care.
Quantum Physics in Stoichiometry. No, just kidding.
Who does he think he's talking to?
Actually, maybe one book that had made a big impression on me is a book called Wisdom by Stephen Hall.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. I love it. What is the favorite thing to do with your kids?
Play.
Love it.
Just general play.
Ideal date with your wife without the kids?
Deep into the mountains.
Greatest movie of all time?
Maybe Contact.
Oh,
Jodie
wow.
Foster.
Yeah, nice. I love it, buddy. Hey, this has been fantastic. So you're heading off again soon? What's the rest, what's coming up for you?
Yeah, next week, off again. First Austria, then Zurich or Switzerland, and then back to Norway again. And then the week after, back into the laboratory again with boys.
Yeah.
And then off to, I'm going to head off for a conference, Science and Cycling in Belgium, actually,
cool.
to speak there. And then eventually spending some Easter holidays days with my family, and then off to Sierra Nevada.
Mate, this has been really one of my all-time favorite conversations. You and I haven't met or spoken, but I feel like I've got a new friend and somebody
Thanks.
That I can I don't know.
I really appreciate that. Thanks.
Yeah, it's been really fun for me, mate, and to spend so much of your time when I know you've got a lot on. So it's been an honor and just a tremendous privilege, really, to have you on the show. So thanks for coming on, buddy.
Thank you so much for having me. This, I can be a guy that very easily get very detail focused, but it depends really on the guy that is asking the question. I have to say that this has been a very fun, energizing, really energizing conversation, and that is maybe what I like the most today. Like I like things that are energizing.
That's awesome. I'm the same. And for everybody listening, you can find all the show notes and timestamps and everything else at bennettendurance.com/media. All right. Stay on the line, mate. Cheers.